Welcome, everyone. Thanks for tuning into The Collective Perspective, Reclaiming and Reshaping Theater, where artists from various identities, disciplines, and from across the country take a critical approach to the theater industry. If you appreciate the discussions being had on this podcast and want to support our creative activism, you can subscribe or follow us on Apple, Spotify, or all other major podcast platforms. We stay up to date with episodes, upcoming articles, and to get to know The Collective better, please like our Facebook page, The Collective Perspective, and Instagram at TCP Theater Podcast. Reviews are always welcome, and please leave comments or questions, as well as send us an email at tcptheaterpodcast@gmail.com.
Are you ready?
Ah, okay.
Hooray! I'm so excited. Okay.
Before we get started, we'd like to take a moment to acknowledge that we three are currently located on the traditional lands of the Coast Salish, Duwamish, Kumeyaay, and Munsee Lenape peoples, past and present. We honor with gratitude the land itself and the nations, and this acknowledgement does not take the place of authentic relationships with Indigenous communities, but rather serves as a first step in honoring the land that we're on.
What's poppin', everyone? My name is Lilia Hushman, they, them, and before the pandemic, I was working in the theater as a movement director, stage manager, performer, and to do that, I was also an educator, and oftentimes, as many of the elite would call, an unskilled laborer. But lols, we all know that's silly. Over to you, Lapika.
Hi, I am Lapika Shah, she, her. I am an actor, and in the before four, I was primarily doing new play development in theater and splitting my time between that and dub work, the English dub market for animation. And these days, I'm home with my cat and I'm just trying to stay sane, y'all. I'm doing quite a lot of volunteer work and a lot of advocacy work and activism, which is quite nice, but I miss theater something fierce.
Here, here.
And I'll lob it over to Vahishta.
Hi, I'm Vahishta Vafadari. She, her. I am a Persian American theater artist, actor, and designer. I have done a good deal of dialect coaching and dialect designing, and previously a little bit of movement and fight choreo, but primarily just a teaching artist, actor, and dialect coach right now, or in the before times, and I guess luckily a little bit right now.
Yes.
Yeah. And also new dog mom, so if we hear pawing at the door, it's a throwback to episode number 2. I am a new dog parent, and he is a tiny terror, and I love him so much, but he tries to hashtag bite the world, and he might try to bite the door to get into the space that I'm currently recording from.
I'm very excited for that. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Love it. Thank you for introducing yourselves. I'm so excited to have this conversation with both of you.
Yell.
And so today what we're going to be doing is having a little discussion that's been inspired by the article in the New York Times entitled "A Great Cultural Depression Looms for Legions of Unemployed Performers." Very sinister. By Patricia Cohen, and it was published on December 26th, 2020. So it's no secret the performing arts industry is suffering tremendously, and it even feels obvious to say so. I don't think anyone out there is denying that, but I appreciated this article because it gives some context to how art workers are left out of consideration for relief as the pandemic has been evolving. And she provides a lot of facts and figures and contextualizing situations with some interviews. And I find this is what I send to most people who aren't in the industry because they're the ones who need to see it more to understand.
Yes. Oh, so true.
Oh, that's a great idea. That's such a good point.
I figured you both would relate to that note. And I wanted to read a quote from the article before we got into it. This is at the very beginning. She writes, during the quarter ending in September, when the overall unemployment rate averaged 8.5%, 52% of actors, 55% of dancers, and 27% of musicians were out of work, according to the National Endowment for the Arts. By comparison, the jobless rate was 27% for waiters, 19% for cooks, and about 13% for retail salespeople over the same period. And then she goes on to provide more context. So I recommend if you have not read it to already do so. And those numbers don't even reflect the technicians, designers, builders, makers, and staff that were working at those venues and those companies. And I'm not interested at all in going into like a comparison war with other industries, which I feel like that type of information is like easy to go into that. But I do find those numbers something to consider. And all of us out of work already know this. It feels very general to say that art workers are suffering because this is a time in history when everyone who is not in the ruling class is affected despite where you are or what you do. But there is something about how other industries are able to turn over in a digital manner that are not considering how theater just simply cannot do that. Mm-hmm. And we are not going to compete with TV and film. It would be silly to even attempt. And I myself have been told countless times by many people who are not a part of this industry that this can be a big time for imagination or revolutionizing what theater can be. And I'm going to be completely honest and say that I find it extremely insulting and condescending. And I have not met one theater maker in like my short 10 years of being a part of this industry that wasn't always ruminating on or imagining better for the American theater. And in fact, no one could ever shut up about it before the pandemic.
Yeah.
Let alone now, right? And I don't think people get to say, well, that's what you signed up for, deal with it, because they just don't. And as everything has been unfolding since our first nationwide quarantine last March, I know that I myself have done a lot of processing, and it's all I really can do is to process how this shift affects me personally, affects my communities and the world at large. But a lot of that processing has been done alone and sporadically. Do I process with others where I feel like I'm just repeating myself? Yeah. And that's really the best I think I can do at this point. And that's what we all can do while we're still taking actions to survive. And I wanted to take this time and make this space for us to have a conversation where we are not catering to being positive for positive's sake, to honor that if you are even a part of the performing arts industry in the first place, it is because you are incredibly hopeful by nature to believe in such a fluid career path. So how are we feeling about anything at this point? Let's do a check-in where we're at.
I will go ahead and start us off, because I, Mahishta, am lucky enough and also like insane enough to in a way be working in working in a couple of time zones. And this evening that has gotten the better of me. My home based community up until last year was in Chicago, Illinois. And even now I am lucky enough to be working with people from Chicago. And that is so weird and confusing. And I'm trying to build a community here, but how do you, can you hear that?
Poppy!
He's a tiny monster and he's trying to get in. But yeah, it's this thing of like, I'm mourning the inability to build a new community. I'm missing my less than a year ago. The last show that I did in Chicago closed in February of 2020. And I came back here like right before everything shut down, and I haven't been able to, like, I was able to do a little bit of like community building in Seattle, but like the hopefulness that I felt when initially moving here is a little dampened, because I think theater is about making a new family every time you start a project. And, you know, that was what I loved about it, was like you were in this space and working on something with people and you became very close, very fast. And like, I was thankfully very lucky to have wonderful groups of people that I was working with in Chicago. And it's so hard to do that over Zoom. It's like, it's great that we're trying to like continue to make art and do something, but it's just, yeah, I think it makes me sad because it still doesn't feel the same. And I have these moments of such joy when I do something like this, when we have had our weekly, you know, the last couple of weeks, little collective meetings, and it just fills me. It fills my heart. And then I'm like on this high, and then like a day later, I'm just like, oh no, oh no. And it's hard and it's sad and it sucks. Feeling that sort of that sense of displacement as on top of it all, and like feeling, and it's frustrating because like I have a muggle job right now, and you know, but that's like my full-time job. It's the first time I've been working 40 hours a week ever at something that, you know, wasn't combined with theater. And
yeah, wow.
That, and I have more of a community there right now in that setting. And it makes me feel like, I don't know, it kind of makes me feel like a traitor in a weird way. Not a traitor, like a, what's the word? An imposter. You know, we all feel imposter syndrome. And now I'm like, I'm not even an actor. I work at a physical therapy clinic. I'm not an actor. I'm a healthcare worker. Like it's identity wise. This pandemic has been rough.
I'm so glad you used the word identity. I feel like that for me has been the thing, the loss of identity. And like, we live in a country that who you are is sort of defined by what you do in this country. And I, as much as I don't like that, that is just what it is. And I, in the first wave of the pandemic, got COVID, my partner and I. And so I was dealing with this dual identity loss of health and physical sense of self. And also this, like, who am I if I'm not an actor? Like, what is my purpose? What do I do? And this article was, which you said it came out in like the end of December, right? It was one of the first times that I saw anybody acknowledging that loss, like in the media. And I also don't want to like compare pain and trauma with other industries, because everybody, like you said, Lilia, is going through the shit. But I felt such this like sense of catharsis and this sense of, I don't know if relief is the right word, like being seen or something like that. Just reading the article and having somebody name the thing that I had been experiencing all goddamn year. Like 2020 was the longest year
right
so far of my entire life. And it was marked by these moments of like undefinable loss. Reading the article just gave me this glimpse and this like just helped me realize that like, yeah, our entire industry, like what other industry shut down and hasn't managed to find a way back? I was thinking the other day that the first time I get to be in a theater again, like I don't know what I will see. I don't know what theater it will be, but I'm going to lose my shit. Like I'm going to just be a sobbing, ugly, crying mess in the corner. Cause it's that space, that sense of community, that sense of experiencing something live, that sense of connection that you can't recreate on Zoom.
No.
Or any number of other online platforms that have been created during this pandemic, to be equitable to all the other non-Zoom platforms. Yeah, I feel like this, like reading this article was the first time that I felt like somebody outside of me and the few friends I'd been, you know, venting with and about, it's the first time anybody just named it and talked about it. And those numbers you read at the beginning, I didn't know whether to scream or cry when I,
Yeah, and it's kind of wild because I feel like that it's just, it's sort of just an assumed thing that when everything shut down and continued to be shut down, people knew that like what we do has always been considered a luxury because that's kind of how it's been incorporated into the American people's lives. Mm-hmm. You know, when I've gone to other countries, I was able to go see a show for $5 on any given night. Mm-hmm. On a weekday night, theater is packed. And here, it's like you save up to be able to buy one ticket, maybe per month, to go and see something, unless you're able to get comps, unless you're able to know somebody who can hook you up, or you like, I'm not sure how anybody else goes and sees shows, but I have not been able to see a majority of shows, mainly because I've been working, but also because it's just not accessible. So then when it comes to trying to speak to an average American who is not in our world, it's a little disconcerting, and because it always has been, but I just think everything has been heightened. And I mean, everything has been heightened, period, in terms of our cultural divide of, you know, looking at the election numbers, looking at anything in the past year has just shown where we've always been. And where we've always been is we are not taken seriously.
Yeah. Cultural work is not valued in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Period. Yeah. And I feel like the thing that I have been like screaming and nobody has been hearing is, or that's what it feels like, is creative work is work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like being an actor is not a hobby and something I do for fun. Like it's my job,
right?
And it's not easy, and no, not anybody can do it. You know, mm-hmm. And I'm sure y'all feel similarly with like you're both performers and also other hats. Like it's not easy.
Yeah, and
that's
shit. That's it. That's where we are. And I find it funny to, I've just stopped trying to prove that to other people because for my own clarity and sake of health, that if we keep screaming that into the void and we keep saying that we're not, you know, we're not valued, what is that going to do to us in the long term? And I have found, just like Vahishta said, like being able to have our weekly Zoom, like that's where my healing at least begins, is the only way I know how. Like we're in the theater. Community is our healing power. Community is our function. It's our collaboration. It's our necessity. We can't do it without each other. And so I think that's another thing that hopefully a segue for the next, you know, the post-pandemic world is everyone keeps screaming at each other online, why don't you have community values? It's like, well, maybe you can learn something from the theater. Yeah. Maybe 100%. You can, you know, take a look at how things operate when you have that value system in place. So that brings me to this question. How do you process these things that we keep saying and keep happening? And I'm sure the people who are listening to this are probably more arts workers, is my guess, at least right now, and people who are part of the theater industry. How do you process as an individual by yourself versus how do you process when you are in groups of other people, and versus how you're trying to be a part of like the national conversation of how we're going to move forward in the American culture?
I mean, I feel like I was really lucky to have started working with a new therapist literally 2 weeks before the pandemic started. So
bless therapists and social workers and all the
fucking bow down. Fucking bow down.
Bless them right now.
There has been a lot of processing with her. Just because of the profound, like, who am I is a really difficult question. Like, I can't really work on anything else in therapy until we can sort of address that. and fully understanding that, like, it's not my fault, right? Like, this is an uncontrollable incident.
Huge. Yeah.
That's one. Yeah. Shout out to therapy.
I feel like I keep going back to my memories, even with the sadness that, like, a Facebook memory of a show that I did or whatever, even with the sadness that that brings, the brief, I think, fleeting sadness that that brings, you know, the last show that I did in Chicago, you know, shout out Top Girls, Remy Bumpo, that, you know, the memories started popping up and, like, our group chat kind of reopened. And there was something about that to be like, oh, it's still there. It's still alive. And that is, like, you know, it's community, but also in myself to sort of remember, like, this was, like, X, Y, and Z were, like, things that I am so proud of. And, like, I'm a like, sort of the daily affirmations and stuff, like, you are an artist and you are wonderful and you are a professional and you are good at your job, even if you're not doing your job right now. It's okay. And, like, you know, that sort of element of it that is kind of self-generating, and then the kind of, you know, the benefit of one of the good things that technology has allowed me to do is to kind of have the evidence of that in photos and in, you know, the whatever the maybe music from a show or something, and, like, that, or, like, you know, going through and organizing all of my dialect notes from that time I had to do Scottish from the Orkneys, you know, and, like, it's just the that reminds me of who I am in that world, even though I might not be physically existing and working in that world right now. And then I think in terms of, you know, something that I find kind of hard is, like, the internet version, like, the other side of the internet thing, the Zoom plays. And, like, while I love that, it feels like sometimes there is a pressure and that it doesn't feel the same. It doesn't feel, for me personally, sometimes it's like, you know, I'm a part of a Facebook group that's really wonderful in that there is no pressure there, you know? If at the last minute I just can't, if I've said I'm going to be a part of this, we're going to do a reading of this play, and if at the last minute I can't, there's so much grace in that group that I can be like, guys, I just don't have it tonight. I can't do it. And so it's nice to have found a place where there isn't pressure, and then to also just be aware of, like, when things aren't helpful. Like certain things that are like, oh, I'm engaging, I'm trying to build something, and, like, I want to know what's going on in the rest of the world and what other people are thinking in terms of theater and what is it doing and this and that. And it's just like, sometimes engaging in that Facebook group is not, I'm just like, what is this doing for me? Is it actually doing anything for me? Is it making me feel productive or hopeful? Or is it invigorating you know, because sometimes I think anger can invigorate, frustration can invigorate. Is it doing that? Or is it pushing towards, like, depression and that bad kind of frustration?
Yeah. Huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Is it helpful?
Yeah.
That's huge. So, I feel like one of the least helpful things that was circulating when this all started was Shakespeare wrote Hamlet during a pandemic.
Oh my God.
I wanted to, like, I was so mad every time I read that. And I was like, yeah, and today I put on a bra.
Big win.
But that's done. I showered today. Like,
yay. Yes.
Like, I feel like that's, and I think even this article is guilty of it, because it, the only people interviewed in the article are people who like had reached some level of success and then found a way to pivot during the pandemic to find some other success and be productive. And, and that is great. I applaud that. I bow down to that. I needed to be depressed. Like I needed to mourn. I couldn't bring myself to do anything creative for so long. Cause it just felt, like you said, Bahista, it just felt wrong. Like it felt unhelpful. And I felt like I was forcing myself to do it because it was something I like was supposed to do. I'm making air quotes. Nobody can see them. Okay. But right. This is a podcast. But do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I was like forcing myself to do this thing because it was like, you're an actor. This is what you do. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't letting myself feel the like bigness of it. Like, we don't know when theater is going to be back, and trying to ram that feeling that live performance gives you into a not live, or often not live, sometimes it's live, but technologically managed, weird, two-dimensional. I can't even make eye contact with y'all. Like, I'm looking at the camera, but it's not, like, you know, just that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Made processing harder, I think. What about you, Lilia?
Yeah.
I'm just nodding along to everything both of you are saying. I feel like it resonates so much with me. And yeah, I find that I felt this unconscious pressure that when my family members or friends in other industries, even in our industry, would be like, how are you doing? First off, before the pandemic, that question always was anxiety inducing for me, right? Yeah. Like I feel, if anything, also another like highlight that the pandemic has done has shown me like the state of anxiousness that I lived in before the pandemic. I was like,
sorry, I laughed because I'm like, oh my God.
Right. I feel you.
Just very revealing. It was very revealing of how I see all these articles coming out during the pandemic of like how to handle being in a stressful career now that your career is
how to manage working from home.
How to manage working from home. How to manage a pivot and now that you're going to digital in your job, like all of these things, as well as like health advice, as well as you know, like how to handle how to hold space and have conversations now that people are, you know, in more survival mode times. And a part of me is just like looking at all of this and going like, get on my level. I've been here forever.
Yeah. Like, where do you think the gig economy came from?
Right.
It's from gigging. It's from us.
So that was definitely like an ego boost for me of being like, well, I've been preparing for this moment for 10 years. So a lot of my processing was just like allowing my ego to fucking flare, right? Like I was not processing in a healthy way. From March to September, I was also in Chicago. I'm now in San Diego. And from then until September, before I came here to stay with my parents, I have older parents that I'm looking after right now, which I'm very lucky, knock on wood, that I'm able to do that. And I was just giving myself space to, I had a pod and we would come together and we would complain and vent and not just vent, but also like ruminate, like when it gets to a point where it is no longer healthy. And we would even, you know, acknowledge that, which I really appreciated, but we didn't do much to change it. And I honestly fully believe that we couldn't at the time. We were doing our best. And a lot of that had to be just like, you know, that was, you know, in June when the Black Lives Matter protests had begun, that was all that took up my time with my pod. And so that added this fuel to like, we're out of work, but this is also why so many people are showing up in the streets, is because we're able to, because we're unemployed right now.
We have time.
We have the time. And so just like all the layers of 2020, of all the things happening, I was not processing in a healthy way. Mm. It wasn't until I came here and I reverted to just like going into YouTube holes that I was like, this is another unhealthy way to process. And
queso was my YouTube. I developed an unhealthy relationship to queso.
Yes. That seems way healthier though than what I was doing.
I went for a physical yesterday. We're about to find out how.
Because when I think about you saying queso, I'm thinking, oh, you're making it. You're getting up. Oh, no. You're doing something. No, okay.
Oh no.
You know what comes pre-made in a jar, and you can get it in a big jar at the store. It's bad. It's not good.
I don't know why YouTube queso made me think like they're giving you recipes. And
oh my gosh.
That would have been the healthier option. I was wallowing.
My bad. Yeah, I think that's the biggest word is like giving myself time to wallow, because anytime someone, wow, we're really coming full circle. It took me 10 minutes to get here. Anytime someone outside of our industry would ask me, how are you doing now? I'm like having to curate an answer to say, I'm really lucky, but it's kind of hard, but I'm okay. And it's exhausting.
Yeah.
It's really exhausting because you don't want to be a bummer. You don't want to bring other people down. You know that they're struggling too. It's just like, how do you have grace for everybody?
Yeah.
I think it's the biggest
thing. Allowing yourself to feel the things that you need to feel, because you can't process and eventually, hopefully one day, you know, move through without feeling the feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because I don't know if there's processing happening on a larger scale in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because it feels like, at least in the theater world, it feels like everybody is just trying to find ways to survive and stay afloat until this capital T is over.
Yeah.
And we don't know when that's going to be.
Yeah. I think something that I'm Facebook friends with a costume designer from Chicago who is brilliant. Christine, last name is Pasquale. And just the things that she's been saying. Also, she's got a really great Etsy store. But just like the things that she's talking about how, like, in this new world that we will one day enter, dressing rooms, dry cleaning. You know, if you're an actor, you know that your clothes get washed once a week. Understudies most likely share clothes with you. And a lot of the times, especially in like a lower budget nonprofit space, you know, the costume designer is doing everything. They're designing, they're finding the pieces, they're making alterations, they're fixing things. And just like the things that she's been saying of like, hey, if you have a set designer and then you also have a carpenter, you should have equivalent things. Mm-hmm. And there's something about that and like the bringing up of the health, the possible health implications and the things that we're realizing right now. And like, yeah, maybe we won't be in the same situation, but is it still okay to like only have our clothes washed once a week? Yeah. And like, just maybe do a hardly there spritz of the vodka spray. Like, is it okay to like have that costume person, it's their job to do laundry every night and be at the show, and they're not compensated adequately for dealing with people's possible, like, you know, I don't want to say bodily fluids, but like sweat is a bodily fluid.
Yeah,
for sure. Like, to be in contact with that, like, there is something about the things that she has been bringing up that make me think about, okay, how do I want to how do I want to start thinking about other aspects of the work when the work starts up again?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's an individual, I think, speaking to change that I believe needs to happen in the community. And that's not actually a community change. Is it? I don't know.
But shouldn't it be?
Yes, it should. But like,
shouldn't that be part of like the systemic changes?
Yes.
That need to happen?
Yeah. And I feel like the places who do that, who have that in practice, are able to because they have the means.
Mm-hmm.
They have the money. Mm-hmm. And even they are struggling to get more money.
Yeah. And then it goes right back to like, how do we show that we actually value art mm-hmm. and culture? Like this thing that is like actually vital for humanity, that has theater has been around for millennia. Like mm-hmm. we all had to take theater studies classes at some point in for millennia. Yeah. Like we need a, it's how we process. It's how we understand and learn and see each other. And if that is such a vital thing, how do we support it mm-hmm. and show in action that it is a vital thing so that this cultural depression doesn't happen again?
Right.
I feel like we're always like, I'm now going to feel like we're always just like a stone's throw away from another cultural depression. Hooray.
But that, like, theater has stood the test of time in that way. And, you know, I feel like this is really morbid, but I a part of me doesn't feel like this iteration of theater will, the current iteration of theater that we're living in, I don't think will last.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that looks. Mm-hmm. I imagine it will be devastating on a lot of levels.
Yeah.
But a big part of me is just sitting back and like having my little time reading history and going online to these, you know, when we say like national conversation, the only way I can imagine we're having that is online, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you go online and there's all these pockets and you're like, no one is really on the same page because there's this theater magazine and this theater magazine and we're you know, speaking about articles on this podcast. So there's all these pockets, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like whatever we're in right now, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, are we just trying to save something that will inevitably demand itself to change?
One thing that feels right about what you're saying is that this idea of going back to quote unquote normal mm-hmm. cannot happen, because if this pandemic has shown anything, it is that normal.
Yeah.
What we were doing was not working mm-hmm. for everybody
mm-hmm.
on many levels. And so I feel like this change you're talking about is, it's terrifying to think about because all change is terrifying, but I feel like it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm really curious about what it's going to look like as well.
Yeah. Because if the billionaires have just gotten richer,
mm-hmm. yeah,
then I feel like all of these solutions that we're hearing about wealth equity
mm-hmm.
affects, because the theater industry in America is just a limb of how the larger systems and institutions work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because the more I talk to so many people about what we hope the theater to be, what we want the theater to be, what the theater can be, I see it existing already all over mm-hmm. the country. People just aren't visible and they don't have the money to be full time and doing it. But mm-hmm. my short time in Chicago with the people I was making, we were doing literally what we have been begging these large theaters to do. We were doing it.
Yeah.
But we weren't, we weren't able to pay each other.
Yeah.
So that's something to think about.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think about pay in terms of, I'm gonna find
I'm going to quote some numbers. Like when we're saying like paying people and like art should be valued and like this is our job, like all these things are not, we're not saying them in a vacuum, right? This is from Be an Arts Hero campaign. Just in case anybody listening is unaware of what like tangible value arts and culture adds, if like anecdotal and like holding up a mirror to humanity is not enough, the arts and culture add $877 billion in value to the economy every year, employ 5.1 million people every year, 50 some percent of whom are currently unemployed, as we said at the beginning of this episode, and account for 4.5% of the USA's GDP. Like, that's a lot.
But we're just like a massage, you know, we're a luxury.
Yeah. A luxury item. Mm.
Oh my God. So I feel like, oh, I feel like I can, I love this. I can go on forever and ever, but I feel like that's a perfect segue into my next question of like acknowledging that, where do we go from here? Because it is important to sit in the shit. Mm-hmm. But I, as I had said earlier to both of you, I like to sit in the shit, but then I like to have an action item afterwards.
Yes.
Whether it's like a personal individual one for myself or for my community, what do you think are ways that we can go from knowing this? Oh yeah. And then I also wanted to say too, that I find it interesting how so many people have that mentality in other industries of like, well, if there is a problem, why don't you like propose some solutions instead of complain about it? Mm-hmm. And I do want to say it's not up to us.
Yeah. Right.
I just want to put that out there that like, it's not up to us to save the theater,
especially as individuals. Like,
And I think we give enough to the theater is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But we do crave these action items because we have to keep going on. We have to keep living. We have to keep moving and shaking and doing what we have been doing forever.
Yeah. I mean, if you love something, there's the hope that you would want to make it better or, you know, more wonderful, I think. Yeah. And so, you know, it's that thing, but it's really hard when you have to get a new job every month or two, you know, every couple months when a show ends, you have to start getting work again and you have to, you know, as much as everyone's, you know, on the actor side of things, you are in a way asking for work. And as much as we have that, we want to like instill power in ourselves as actors. It is really hard to then be like, well, I want to change things. Well, am I going to work if I want to change things? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's always that part of it too. But yeah,
I feel like you're bringing up a really crucial point about our industry, that like wanting to change the industry should not mean that we get blackballed by the industry. Mm-hmm. Like that's one aspect of where things need to change institutionally in the structure of the American theater. But I think even bigger than that, for me at least, I want so badly for theater to grow and be better, like you said, Bhishta, but I also want it to survive. Mm-hmm. And right now, with this pandemic, one way the arts and culture sector can survive is with federal support, is with governmental support. This isn't a strange concept. Like, Lily, you were talking about working in other countries and being able to see a show for really cheap. European nations, South American nations, so many other countries have governmental support for the arts. And that allows artists to do what they do, provide this vital service to citizens, people, tourists, whoever, provide employment for adjacent industries. and allows allow artists to like survive and prosper and not have to worry about like living paycheck to paycheck or where they're going to get health insurance or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So one concrete, I mentioned them before, the Be an Art Zero campaign started during this pandemic. It's an intersectional grassroots campaign that is made up of arts and culture workers around the country. And they have been advocating for proportionate relief to the arts and culture sector of the American economy. And I think that word proportionate is crucial because you don't realize how much arts and culture actually contribute numerically until you break that down. And to see how much relief has been given, like, yes, having like the, what was it called? PUA, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, to like allow freelance workers to get unemployment. Yes, that was huge. And I'm super glad that was extended. And who knows how much longer that's going to last. But we know that theater is going to be one of the last industries to come back in this pandemic, in the immediate. So like, that helps individual artists. How do we help the places they work? How do we help the adjacent industries, the shops that used to build the sets, the warehouses where you would buy materials to make costumes, I can't even think of other examples right now, but so many like adjacent industries. How do we do that? One way is through proportional relief. I think the latest COVID relief bill included the Save Our Stages Act, and we're going to see what that does. Mm-hmm. There was another article also in the New York Times published in mid-January by Jason Farrago or Farrago. I don't know how to say his last name. I'm very sorry, Jason. it was called The Arts Are in Crisis. And here's how Biden can help. And he proposed a bunch of different ideas, like concrete steps that the Biden administration could take to support the arts. Things that have a basis in history, that have had success in history. So I'm going to be really curious to see if and what this administration does to do that. But that feels like one thing the arts need. Like every other industry in this country, it has that kind of value system, you know, and has gotten that kind of relief. Every sector, except us.
Mm-hmm. And I love one thing in that article that really stuck out to me was that, I can't remember if it was in some places or in the past, the giving of grant money, essentially, the distribution of that money, it's not the same as when you get a grant today. Because I feel like there's so much more. I think the way that it was explained was there's so much more that has to be proved today. And you have to sort of achieve a certain level of quality, which I get that. I understand that. But if the point is to get people back to work, which I think is a lot of what people around the country are saying, is like, we need to get back to work. I think that There's something in there to be mined, in especially in the way that it was phrased in the article, which the idea of what we understand today as a grant, I don't think should be the basis for that, because grants involve grant writers, they involve nonprofits paying money to somebody, and or you know, a tiny nonprofit spending numbers and numbers of hours putting a grant together with proof, with evidence. And I don't think that would be helpful. I don't think that would be helpful in the same way that it would be to be like, you want to make something, it's going to have X, Y, Z. Cool. Done. There you go. Like there's something about that I think in terms of effectiveness and just making it happen is really exciting in the way that it was proposed in the article, especially just like, I don't have to say that this is going to get a Tony, you know, but like, if I can show how it would, but if I can say like, hey, I want to do something with, I don't know, maybe I've got a couple of students here that are, you know, they're dreamers and they came up with a script and we want money to do it. And that's all I've got. I don't even have a, you know, maybe the script isn't even done yet. We just have an idea. I don't know. I think that would be enough. I think that should be enough.
I think that's also bringing up the like crucial, this should be another podcast episode. We should ask, sure. We should put this on our like brainstorm list, but like the funding model for theater needs to change.
Yes.
I think it is another podcast episode.
Stay tuned, just, everybody.
Stay tuned, friends, for a podcast episode.
But for longevity, right? Like this, the current way we give money to theater and the way things are chosen to get money to become theater pieces, that has to change.
Big time. Yeah. Oh, that's a beautiful segue.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. To tell everyone to stay tuned for that episode where we talk about funding models and models in general for the theater, and to ask any lingering thoughts or questions that or curiosities we have as we go out tonight. Into our homes.
Go out into the other room.
Out of my daytime pajamas into my nighttime pajamas.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like the one thing that the Cultural Depression article sort of skirted, like kind of touched on, but didn't dive into, that I'm really interested in someone diving into is the link between arts workers and health insurance. Mm-hmm. Like we in the gig economy, literally, sometimes our health insurance is tied to our work. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful that Obamacare exists so that there is an option when I don't have enough work. But like I'm in the position right now where because all of my work last year got canceled, because I don't know if you heard, but there was a global pandemic. But because it all got canceled, I didn't earn those health insurance weeks through my union. And therefore, I have insurance until April and then ? And yes, Obamacare is an option to me, but I'm also unemployed. And so what is the cost of that? And also someone who's dealing with like long haul COVID symptoms, like this is not something I want to be thinking about in a pandemic. Mm-hmm. But so it was sort of touched on in the article, but not really. But I know I'm not the only arts worker in this position or who's like, who has to think about that connection.
Yeah, I think something that I'm really kind of interested in is just like, I'm an actor, so I understand very specifically how I fit in. But just like looking beyond myself in terms of directors, choreographers, other designers, like what are lighting designers doing right now?
I'm like stage managers.
I know. And they're like some of the most amazing people in the world. And I think we've all seen the meme of like stage managers ran the vaccine rollout.
It'd be done, y'all.
It would be which is this, it's the dumbest thing. Yeah, it would be. But I mean, I get, well, okay, so there's that. And then my other thought while we were doing this was I listened to a lot of, because I have done some TV film commercial work, and I know, Lapika, that's also in your wheelhouse. I like, part of me is like, okay, well, that's art. It is, but it's very different. And like, was that thing going around, also another meme thing going around where it was like, okay, well, if you've survived the pandemic by watching Netflix, then art was helping you survive. And I completely 100% agree with that. And part of me is also like, while I've done TV and film and like, or, you know, some of that, and I hope to in the future. Where does the theater fit into that? And also, you know, I can't help but think about that in terms of, I would love to know, and I could do a little, I might do a little digging after this, does what percentage of the numbers that we saw in some of these articles, what percentage of those extend to film and television? Because that is definitely a more like, that is the thing. The thing is that TV and film is still happening because that makes money. Mm-hmm. And like, think about how much Marvel has made. Think about Disney Plus. Think about Netflix. Think about Hulu. All of these different things. And like, they are making money. They are producing content because it's all based in, there are these huge corporations and companies that they use art and entertainment, and but it's so, in a way, it is so connected to theater and so separate from it. And there's something about that relationship that I'm just like, okay, well, what does that mean in terms of like the community and larger ideas and art, you know?
That is making me think of this sentence from Patricia Cohen's article. The public may think of performers as A-list celebrities, but most never get near a red carpet or an award show. The overwhelming majority, even in the best of times, don't benefit from Hollywood-sized paychecks or institutional backing. They work season to season, weekend to weekend, or day to day, moving from one gig to the next. And you can substitute crew, stage manager, director, playwright for performer in that sentence, and it would still be true.
Mm-hmm. My last lingering curiosity is, how are we going to continue to take care of each other? Because at the end of the day, what's going to get us through? If we don't get help monetarily from others, we're always going to come back down to what we do, which is honor our village. Mm-hmm. If anyone is looking for things to check out or some resources to look into, here are some plugs.
I just want to shout out the lovely Christine Pasquale, who is a Chicago-based costume designer and just amazing person who I have the pleasure of meeting a couple of times and seeing lots of her work on stage. She has a really great Etsy shop. The name is Fancy Dress. That's all one word, FANCYDRESS. She's got amazing, oh my gosh, she just put scrunchies up. There's masks and just various knitted things, as well as these fun little chains that are like the eyeglass chains, but it's for your mask so you don't lose it. Also just like a bunch of other stuff. And she's really fabulous. And again, her thoughts on how we should proceed coming out of the pandemic in the theater, specifically for costume designers, her thoughts are really something that I look forward to seeing on the Facebooks.
I'm going to have to go look her up on the Facebooks. I'm just going to shout out Be an Arts Hero again. I love them so much. Check out beanartshero.com to learn more about what they do. Maybe if you want to get involved, there's a bunch of different ways to join that movement on their website. And also you could donate some money. They're 100% volunteer run, but the activism work that they do and all the initiatives that they currently have going are always made easier with funds. So beanartshero.com, and I'm pretty sure they're at beanartshero on all the social medias. Look for them. They're great. Wouldn't it also be nice if we shared a way that we are combating our mourning? Everybody's nodding. You can't see that. But.
I keep forgetting. Yes, I would love to. One way that is bringing me joy in this time of mourning is sometimes just giving in and going to bed earlier. I am not one to do that. And the past couple of nights, I've just been reading a book as I'm going to sleep instead of being on my phone or on the computer.
What?
I know, this witchcraft is too much for me to handle. It is really amazing. And getting some fiction into my life via pages rather than these amazing shows I'm watching right now, but it has really been a time for like taking a breath and winding down and getting some rest.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about you, Lupika?
Well, I have been in my New York apartment for many days now. My partner, I'm grateful he has gone back to work full time. So I spend much time here alone with my cat. And so I've gotten very into podcasts. And there's something about true crime right now that has just been bringing me joy. I don't know why. It's a little macabre. But I like knowing when the bad guy is caught. Mm-hmm. There's something about that. So I have been really enjoying Tenfold More Wicked. And That's Messed Up. And My Favorite Murder. And the good news at the end when the bad guy is caught just makes me really happy. Like, sometimes it takes a long time to get there, but I really like it.
So your joy is you love to be terrified until the tension has paid off.
The actual joy is there are voices that make me feel less alone in my apartment when I'm like playing the podcast.
Yes.
I think that's the actual joy. Also baking. I have quarantine bingoed and I bake my own bread now, and that's great.
Nice.
Yes.
I love it.
Love bread. Damn, yes. I love bread. Would you mind if I play something really quickly?
Go for it.
It's a wonderful TikTok that's been going around, but I think the sound covers it. That's a cat. It's a cat that finishes the scale.
Wow, that is pretty much the best metaphor I could think of right now.
Yeah, I'm into that.
And before we go, I was hoping maybe we could all take a breath together if you were interested in that.
Yes, yeah. Will you lead us?
Yeah, I'd love to. So empty out all your air. And fill the belly. Exhale. And let's do one more. Inhale. Fill as much as you can. Hold at the top if you can. And release. I'm really grateful to the two of you. I'm grateful for this collective. And for anyone who's listening, if you are a part of the performing arts industry, I hope that by listening, you could have felt seen in some way in that how we are processing and trying to get through this is may not be unique, but incredibly felt throughout all space. And if you're not a part of the performing arts industry, I hope by listening, you could have found some way to empathize with your fellow family members or friends who are struggling through this, and hopefully give you some insight into the additional layers that we're processing. Thank you for listening, and thank you both. Onward.
Thank you. Onward.
Yay!
Thanks again for tuning in. We hope that you will join us on the first and third Friday for each new episode. To stay up to date, you can subscribe on the platform you are currently listening to. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at TCP Theater Podcast. We really appreciate your review, comments, or questions. you can reach us via email at tcptheaterpodcast@gmail.com or through any of our social media. Thank you for listening to The Collective Perspective, Reclaiming and Reshaping Theater with
Alex Reed,
Anna Sofia Villanueva,
Cambria Pereira,
Lilia Hushmand,
Lupika Shah,
Ugi Push,
Saimuk Da Duong Pusai Vong Sai,
Sequoia Hawk,
Shalana Wanch,
Sophie Payton,
Tia Jemison,
Vahishta Vafadari,